Welcome to Well That Was Weird, the podcast, Serial Saturday edition, where each week we discuss murder, mayhem, and the weirdest stories history has to offer. My name is Isaiah.
And I'm Chance. This week, as you can tell by the intro, we're kind of changing the format up just a little bit, but we've just kind of thought, okay, you know, we've touched on all of these serial killers, and we thought, well, let's talk about some of these more, I guess you could say, horrifying moments from history.
There's a lot of them. Yeah, like while there are tons of serial killers, and that's what people love to listen to, there are a lot of, like, disasters.
Yeah.
But crazy things that have happened over, you know, the history of the world that don't get a ton of attention.
Yeah.
And we're not talking like a modern day, like, you know, like 9/11 school shooting, like those kind of disasters.
No, we're talking
about these like one-off crazy things that have happened. And today is definitely going to be one of those.
Yeah.
Today we are discussing the 1955, Le Mans disaster.
Yep.
Which is something that happened in France.
Yeah.
During a race, an annual race. And do you want to take it away and kind of give us some more detail on that? Because I didn't know about this. Chance brought this up because he had read about it a few days ago. And oh, my God.
Yeah.
this is horrifying. And I'd never heard of this. This is just never come up before.
Yeah. So basically what happened, if you're not familiar with the Le Mans race, it's called 24 Hours of Le Mans. And it's a car race.
Is this what Death Race was based off of?
Yeah. 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 I wish it was that cool, but not really. Le Mans is basically, it's a 24-hour long race where all of the big car manufacturers, they try to show off their newest improved cars.
Yeah.
At this race. So it's like Ferrari, Jaguar, Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, like Ford, I guess.
Yeah, like all of these big ones. And what they do is the challenge, the way the race works, to kind of understand for a little bit of backstory, is it's a certain length to make a lap. Like it's a certain racetrack, but it's long. It's not like... Yeah,
it's not a circle.
Yeah, it's not a circle. Like they drive through like the countryside and everything.
Yeah, kind of like the Autobahn.
Kind of like that, yeah. So the idea is you win the race at the end. Everybody races for 24 hours, and it's not based on who finishes first or second or whoever. Mm-hmm. It's however many laps you complete.
Yeah.
That's the winner. So the idea is the cars have to be made fast, but they also have to be made to run for 24 hours at like a high performing thing. So they use a lot of experimental things in the cars, like they build the bodies out of different materials. They build...
Which will definitely come into play
later. That comes into play later, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So basically what happened is there was a lot of anticipation for this race, and there was a lot of people there. I mean, because people don't only line up at like the start line. It's kind of like, you know, at a NASCAR race, there's people all the way around the track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is a track that's multiple kilometers long. I think it says, I don't know exactly how big this car was, but the top speeds of these cars at the time was about 170 miles per hour.
So I've never understood why people, like, you see those like drift races and like the rally car races where spectators will stand right next to the road, like behind some hay bales. And I'm like, well, that is very dangerous. And then after reading this story and hearing about it, I still even more don't understand why people stand that close.
No.
And in this disaster, what we'll read about happened at a very populated part of the race.
Yeah, it was kind of near the...
It wasn't on a back road.
No.
This was like a stretch where they actually had like stands.
Yeah, they had stands of people. It's kind of like the finish line, essentially, is where this took place. But also, you need to understand a little bit more about the crash and the way it was set up. They didn't have pits for people to pull off of, kind of like how in NASCAR, it's like a separate lane where they get off of the track.
If you know, if you're trying to do something, there's at least one spot where you can pull off.
Yes. Okay. So that's kind of where this crash comes into play.
Yeah.
Is the pit on this was right near the finish line, I guess you'd say, the beginning of the course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all these people were in the stands. And the pit was just kind of off to the side.
Yeah.
It's just like changing lanes. So it's kind of like having a breakdown lane alongside a highway, basically.
Yeah.
Is all the pit really is.
You got a shoulder to...
Yeah, you basically just have a shoulder, exactly. So just a little bit more. I don't know exactly how big this circuit is. This might actually kind of tell me. So it's 13 kilometers, which is 8.4 miles, about 8.5 miles is this race. So it's not a NASCAR type race. The idea is to see how many laps you can make it around. So everybody is, they have 24 hours to do this thing. And basically what happened is Mercedes-Benz had debuted its new 300 SLR in this year's World Championship, which was 1955. And they actually had a record-setting win earlier on in the year. And what was unique about this car is that the body was made of an ultra-lightweight magnesium alloy called Electron, is what they named it.
Electron?
Yeah.
They making a supervillain?
exactly.
You'll rule the world.
Apparently, the car didn't. The car actually didn't have the one thing they skimped on, I guess.
Airbags.
Well, they
brakes.
None of the drivers use seatbelts. None of these cars have seatbelts. Yeah. So they travel at like 170 miles an hour, and none of them use seatbelts. And the idea was. The reason why they didn't want seatbelts is they figured it was safer to be thrown from the car than to be trapped in the burning wreckage.
I mean, in a way, that's kind of true, but you can never tell when that would be better until it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you could be, of course, you could be trapped in a burning vehicle, but also I kind of get like you need to be easily removed from the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was removed.
yeah, he was removed. he was removed very quickly.
At a high speed.
See, this car, despite having the really cool like magnesium alloy, they didn't use disc brakes on the car. It lacked the state-of-the-art disc brakes that was found on their rival Jaguar D-Type at the time. So they used inboard drum brakes and an air brake behind the driver that could be raised to increase drag and slow the car, like an airplane.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so it's cutting the wind resistance.
Or yeah, so it's, that's what this thing had for brakes.
It's about like throwing a parachute behind it and hoping that it deploys.
Yeah, exactly. They had some of the best drivers, you know, driving these things. And so, of course, there were no real safety measures, course, back then that we know today. So there were two layout changes to make the circuit a little bit shorter. The circuit was largely unaltered since the inception of the race, since 1923, when top cars at the time, top speeds were about 60 miles an hour. So they didn't make any changes when cars could drive 60 miles an hour to when they could now drive 170 miles an hour. There was no safety changes made.
Well, like we got to think too that automotive innovation quickly scaled.
Yes.
Like we go from like 1910, you've got like the Model A or whatever.
Yeah.
And then 1955, we're up to 175 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Like racing drag cars. Yeah. Like they were so busy making them faster and more sleek.
Yeah.
To try to like show off, safety was not a priority at that time.
Yes, exactly. And you know, here's a few things. You know, like I mentioned, there wasn't really essentially a pit, like I said. The circuit was actually resurfaced and widened, so I mean there's that. It was resurfaced at least to handle these types of things. But also the pits and grandstands had recently been reconstructed, but there was no barriers between the pit lane and the racing lane. Like I said, it's just like having like a shoulder to pull off of. But there was only a 4 foot high wall of dirt separating the track and the spectators. Like, that's it. Like, you know, like at NASCAR, they have like the fences to like keep the cars in if they crash, so that way they don't fly out into the crowd. Yeah, it was just a 4 foot high,
like, open road.
Yeah, wall of dirt. And you know, as I mentioned before, the cars didn't have seat belts or anything like that. So this race began at 4 p.m. on a Saturday, and it's supposed to run from 4 p.m. on Saturday to 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay,
it's 24 hours. The cars in the lead were the Ferrari, the Jaguar, and the Mercedes-Benz right off the bat. And they were in the lead within the first hours. So the accident actually happened at 6:26 p.m. So it was only like 2.5 hours into the race at the end of lap 35. And this is when the first pit stops for the leading cars were starting. So, and like I've mentioned before, the fact that the pits did not have a... they weren't separate from the rest of the track. That plays an important role here. It really does. It plays a very important role here. So on lap 35, Hawthorne and Fangio, which Fangio was the driver for the Mercedes-Benz and Hawthorne was the driver for the Jaguar. They were racing, you know, side by side. And so he... They were just racing along. They were kind of lapping each other. And so the lap before, Hawthorne's pit crew told him to come in for the next lap. On the next lap, come in for a pit. He had just lapped somebody who was running sixth, and he was determined to keep his rival, Fangio, which was, again, he was in the Mercedes-Benz, at bay as long as possible. So he kind of caught up, and he moved over to the right to let this other driver pass because there was another driver behind him. Moved over to the right to let this other driver pass because this guy was going into the pit. And so then Hawthorne raised his hand to show, like, hey, I'm coming in for a pit, and pulled across to the right. But the guy who was driving the Jaguar, Hawthorne, he had those fancy disc brakes.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to stop really quick.
Yeah.
But the guy in the Mercedes wasn't. He wasn't able to stop really quick because he had that stupid, like, air thing.
He's on that train time where he has to, like, keep going to slow down.
Yeah, so this guy was able to brake really hard to slow the Jaguar down from, like, 100 miles an hour to, like, nothing to get into the pit.
Within, like, 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, what happened is when this guy... there was a guy behind him, which was Macklin. He braked hard and ran off the right-hand edge of the track and threw up a bunch of dust.
Yeah.
So when Macklin tried to avoid Hawthorne, a loss of control from going onto the change of road surface or the disc brakes operating unevenly, Macklin's car veered across to the center of the track because he went off and then overcorrected and veered across to the center of the track, briefly out of control. But this put him right into the path of the Mercedes-Benz, who was going 120 miles an hour at this time. And this driver was intent on doing another lap. And so since this
he wasn't intending to stop. Like, he was still driving.
Yeah, he was going.
Yeah. And then he just gets hit from the right.
Yeah.
Which flings him into the wall.
So this guy actually makes it through. There's two Mercedes drivers.
Okay.
The first guy makes it through, swerves around and makes it through.
The one, and he's the guy that caused the crash, right?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
He swerves around and makes it through. But LeVay's, which was the guy in the Mercedes, he actually, his right front wheel rode up on the left rear corner of Macklin's car, which acted like as a ramp and launched this car into the air, flying over the spectators and rolling end over end for 260 feet. And he was thrown free of the tumbling car, but his skull was crushed when he hit the ground.
Now, one important thing to note here is while this happened in 1955, there were cameras rolling,
mm-hmm.
and there are photos and videos of the crash happening, which you can watch. And you can see it's a pretty quick video. You see the crash happen, how fast it happens, and you can also see some of the aftermath of what occurred.
Yeah.
So like Chance mentioned, the car went over the wall because the other car acted as a ramp, essentially. So
yep.
flinging him over the dirt wall, he crashed. The car explodes in sending large pieces of shrapnel through the crowd.
Yep.
And these are people tightly packed. Like, this was a spectacle
yeah.
for 1955. So yeah. there are hundreds of people standing there. You can see the moment that this a piece of the car flies, and what you would expect to hit the ground does not hit the ground and instead bounces through a crowd of people
yeah.
on fire and continues down the track another 200 feet.
It looks like a stone that you're skipping across the water.
Exactly. If you took a piece of sheet metal, if you took magnesium,
threw it like a frisbee.
If you took magnesium, lit it on fire, threw it like a frisbee, and it skipped it across a crowd of people, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So go ahead, and if you have the details, yes. please read what happened.
Yeah. Because there was this also occurred where the grandsons were, was also at like a curve in the road.
Yeah.
So whenever he crashed, instead of just staying straight on the road,
he went sideways.
He went sideways and like towards the crowd, towards the packed grandstand. So the car landed on the earthen embankment between the spectators and the track. That was that little 4-foot thing, but that basically was like a ramp, essentially, because yeah. it was like a ramp. So it bounced off of that, then slammed into a concrete stairwell structure and disintegrated. That's when the car essentially blew up.
There are, in that video that I mentioned, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure there's a second where you can actually see the driver's corpse mm-hmm. Laying on the track. And I think for a second, they actually spray him with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, because he's on fire.
Because he's on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very dead at that point, but also on fire.
Yeah. So what happened when that car basically disintegrated after hitting the concrete stairwell structure? The momentum of the heaviest components of the car, like the engine, the radiator, and the front suspension.
They kept going.
Yes, they went into the crowd for 330 feet, just rolling through the crowd at like 120 miles an hour.
Who did it? Object in motion stays in motion?
Yeah. Yeah, and it crushed all of those people in its path. Like, can you imagine an engine block? How big, how heavy are engine blocks? Like,
yeah, like people die from those just like falling on them from a couple feet in a, yeah. in a, you know, mechanic's garage.
Yeah, exactly.
Let alone an engine block that yeah. has been flung like a catapult projectile in siege warfare into a crowd of people. You know the scene in Two Towers when they fling part of the broken wall
yes,
into the crowd
at
of
the
orcs?
Uruk High.
Yeah. And it rolls. Imagine that was an engine block. That's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing that you were talking about, the piece that wound up like decapitating people.
Yep.
14 people were decapitated, and it's the hood of the car is what happened. They called
it so insane.
Yeah, they called it the bonnet lid, apparently. It apparently scythed through the air, decapitating tightly jammed spectators like a guillotine.
It's like the scene in Ghost Ship when that wire yes. snaps and just cuts all those people in half.
Yeah. And apparently, also, one of the bad things is spectators had apparently climbed onto ladders and scaffolding to get a better view of the track. And they were actually crowding to use the underpass to get to the pits, and they were all in the path of this debris. So there was people up on scaffolding. This debris took the scaffolding out from under them. They fell.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but 14 people were decapitated.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, what I was talking about in that video, that's the moment you see
yeah.
is when that metal skips across the crowd. It's decapitating people.
Yes.
You can't make out yeah. people being decapitated, but the fact that it does not hit the ground and bounces and curves.
Yeah.
That's when it cuts someone's head off. 14 people, actually. But in addition, 14 people decapitated. And then on top of that, what, 88 people were killed?
Just it, well, 70 more were killed, 14 decapitated. Gotcha. So a total of 84 people were killed with 120 more non-fatal injuries.
And there were multiple cameras going.
Yeah.
And in the video, in the short video, the announcer or narrator of this film does not hold back.
No.
So imagine listening to a radio show and then that guy goes, 14 people were decapitated and 84 altogether. women, men, and children, entire families were slaughtered in a matter of seconds. Like, that's exactly what he says.
Yeah, that's exactly what he says.
Word for word, but like pretty much he's like, nope, they were all murdered. Like,
yeah, the Jaguar driver, Hamilton, who was watching from the pit wall, he saw this happen in front of him. He recalled, this is a quote from him, he said, "The scene on the other side of the road was indescribable. The dead and dying were everywhere. The cries of pain, anguish, and despair screamed catastrophe. I stood as if in a dream, too horrified to even think."
There was a, there's a camera in the crowd where it like happened in front of him. Like, yeah. He was in the crowd filming people when it happened. And he moves the camera over and people come rushing towards him to run away because like there's fire. And and as the crowd moves, there are mangled corpses in this camera view. Like, that, I think, I'm pretty sure it was a man. I didn't see his torso. I just saw his leg that was completely twisted in the wrong direction.
Yep.
That was horrifying.
Yeah.
Like,
let's watch a recap again.
Is this audio playing through too?
No.
Oh, okay. There it goes. It skips. There's just a ball of fire. People are running. Yep. Is that a piece of metal on that guy?
I think so.
It's just the engine block stopped on that one guy.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is it's not like it. Oh my God, he's scorpioned. If you're listening and you know what a scorpion is, it's when you fall and your legs go over your head, like from behind you.
Yeah.
But he's stuck like that.
Yeah, but he's also twisted around the wrong way too. His torso's twisted around.
He is, isn't he? There he is. Yep. So the bottom of his foot is like caressing his cheek. I think is what I'm what I'm looking at. And that's a bunch of ladders, like you were saying.
The scaffolding.
What's so insane to me too is like, not only do you watch this,
but
it's like a scene out of Final Destination. It's not like it wiped out a line of people. It skipped through the crowd.
Yeah.
So you're just standing there and then, you know, 10 people next to you are just crushed in a second.
Yeah. Yeah. And things only get worse. From here, after all these people were essentially taken out like bowling pins from the engine block, and then all these people were decapitated from the hood of the car, it gets worse because when the rest of the car landed on the embankment, the rear-mounted fuel tank exploded, and the fire from the resulting explosion raised the temperature of the remaining electron bodywork. And now I remind you again that was made of, what was it, like magnesium?
Magnesium.
Which if you've ever seen magnesium burn, it's what they put in fireworks, essentially.
Yeah.
To make it like spark and kind of explode. So the remaining bodywork was heated past its ignition temperature, which was lower than that of other metal alloys due to its high magnesium content. So the alloy burst into white hot flames, showering the track and crowd with magnesium embers.
There's a point in the video where a guy like runs up to the burning car, and right as he does, it explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not like it doesn't like blow him away.
No.
But it's enough to like blow back, and he's like, oh shit, and like turns the other direction.
Yes, exactly. And all the rescue workers were not familiar with magnesium fires, so they were like, get the water.
They're spraying it, and it's only, like, the fire is so hot, it's not doing anything.
Yes.
Like, they're spraying water on it, and it's just sizzling before it even touches the car.
As a result, the car burned for several hours.
Yeah.
Before it just burned out.
So not only are they having to clean up corpses, But there's this giant fireball on the track. And yeah. they finished the race. The race kept going.
Yeah.
Because I think he mentions it in the video. A lot of the drivers were past this point and they didn't even know it happened.
Yeah.
So it's not like you could like radio somebody and been like, please stop. Hundreds of people were just murdered.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, we're going to keep on going.
Yeah. And then just to add all of it, Macklin's car, that was the one that was kind of rammed like on the corner. It was heavily damaged, but whenever it was hit, his car veered to the right of the track into the pit lane, missing some people there. And then it hit the unprotected pit wall because it, you know, has all this energy from getting hit by the other car. And then before finally running down a policeman, a photographer, and two officials who were all seriously injured.
Jeez.
And then rebounded back across the track again to end up skating down the left side for a second time. And Macklin, the driver of that car, survived this without any injuries whatsoever. I mean, yeah.
I wonder how bad he felt after that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
what was his first name?
Macklin. Let's see. Let me go back. Who was Macklin?
I'm just wondering if there were interviews with him like years later when he's just like, yeah, I had absolute PTSD from this.
Well, I'm sure. I don't know. Mike Hawthorne, Pierre LeVay, Lance Macklin. Yeah, Lance Macklin. That was the guy who kind of survived this. But the aftermath of this, you know, was just, because like you mentioned, there were still drivers going through the race who were still miles away.
Yeah.
And they're rolling up on this. trying to see, they're rolling up on this scene, basically. So LeVay's co-driver, LeVay was the driver, Pierre LeVay was the one who was in the car that killed all these people, essentially. His co-driver was a man named John Fitch. He was suited up and ready to take over the car at the upcoming pit stop and was standing with LeVay's wife, Denise, and they saw the whole thing in front of him. This guy's co-driver, as well as his wife, as well as the driver's wife, saw all of this and watched this dude get flung out of the car, die on the track while he's on fire.
So apparently later on, Lance Macklin kept racing, and an incident during the Tourist Trophy in Dundrod.
Yeah.
Macklin crashed his Austin Healey 100S, avoiding an accident, but two men were killed.
Good Lord.
And then Macklin retired from motorsports at the urging of his then girlfriend.
Well, okay.
It only took the accidental murder of three men for him to be like, I'm going to call it quits.
Yeah.
He died in 2002.
Wow. So, yeah, they saw this whole catastrophe unfold. LeVay's lifeless body, which was severely burned, lay in full view on the pavement until somebody hauled down a banner to cover it. So what he's covered with isn't even like a sheet. It's a banner that somebody just found. Like a race banner.
Buy Budweiser.
Yeah.
This is all we got.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in order to even get people there, they had to go find the media center to even use a telephone. And at the time, they heard that there were at least 48 deaths already confirmed. Whenever John Fitch was returned to the pit. So
imagine being that guy that had to walk around being like 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, well, is that part of the same guy? Is that just a hand? Yeah. Like,
I was
estimating who these body parts belong to.
I was thinking the same thing just by looking at these photos of like the aftermath.
Imagine what happened to that guy in the film that we said was twisted in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
He had all his limbs, right?
I think so.
I mean, we didn't see his head, but it was kind of covered by another person. So, because I'm just wondering, like, how twisting his entire body like that could happen and he didn't lose a limb.
That's true.
Like, what did he get hit by? The engine block?
Probably.
Well, his fucking insides were probably dust. Like.
Okay, there's the engine block.
That is insane. That is, what would you say, like 50 feet in the air, maybe? 25?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 50-50 for sure.
And then it just... Good Lord. The speed.
Hey, we gotta... I gotta...
And blows up. God! It doesn't get any easier watching it.
No, it's horrific. Just a bunch of...
That dude's just like, what's going on?
I'm pretty sure
a
that...
child.
I'm pretty sure that's somebody's missing head.
I can't see it from where I'm sitting, but...
That's LaVey, the driver.
Yep, he's most assured... He's smoking. His body is smoking.
This is just, this is
that's,
wild.
It's just, look, in the background, it's just a string of corpses.
Yeah.
And all those people were on ladders.
Yeah.
Dude,
there's
that
a bunch
is,
of blood,
that's
too.
Probably, oh, I guess that's how that happened. He was on a ladder.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's, that about kind of wraps up the 1955 Le Mans disaster.
I'm so in shock.
Yeah.
About how brutal that was.
It really was, especially from something being from like 1955. You'd think that the footage wouldn't be as good as it is.
It's pretty clear. Well, like the stationary camera in the crowd is clear.
Yeah.
The crash itself is kind of grainy, but also you have pieces of metal going 170 miles an hour.
Yeah, I don't. They didn't exactly have HD filming back then, so.
Because it's like, imagine he's going 120.
Yeah.
He hits that wall. Flies over it, and then everything else in the car continues to go.
Yeah.
It was going so fast, it ejected itself from the vehicle.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Fucking engine. Like, it really was like a catapult.
Yeah, you can like, see it.
It's just a black cloud flying through the air and then just destroying everything in its path.
Yeah, you can see that engine block flying through the air.
That is insane to me.
There's the engine block.
And that, all of that right there, people. Those just
and
people.
That's that. That is the, that hood of the car.
It just.
Wow.
It's like a frisbee.
Yeah, it is. Just, it's just like a metal frisbee. Yeah, so I encourage you to go and look up this video. It's easily findable on YouTube. All you got to do is just type in like 1955 Le Mans crash video.
Yeah, L-E and then M-A-N-S.
Yeah. So yeah, that wraps up this episode of Serial Saturday.
We hope you've enjoyed and got as, surprised as we are on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to get out of here. I'll see you guys later on in the week for another episode.
Bye.
Bye.